Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, we just had Governor Jesse Ventura back on. He happened to be with us last Friday, and then Lord Monckton came on, saying that ClimateGate is an absolute fraud. It's all a scam. He was, a few years ago, on the bandwagon with them. He was fooled. He's now admitted he was fooled. He's very angry. A lot of supporters, well-meaning supporters of this fraud, are now waking up en masse thanks to the work and the research of Lord Christopher Monckton and his incredible ClimateGate caught green-handed report that's up on his excellent investigative site that we'll be giving you the URL for. He's with us graciously for the rest of the hour to report on day one and two of the Global Government Takeover Summit. The UN's calling it the most important summit in history. YouTube says our future is being decided in Copenhagen. They're pushing it. Lord Christopher Monckton, third Viscount of Monckton and Brenchley, has worked at all levels of government, has been a top journalist, has a scientific organization advising governments and corporations, was one of the chief advisors to Margaret Thatcher. The list goes on and on. He really needs no introduction. But Lord Monckton, we go to break in 3 minutes. We'll come back with plenty of time to break this down. But first off, the climate gate blew up even bigger than I thought it would. It is collapsing. You are now there at the center of these crooks trying to declare their global hegemon. Tell us what's happening in Copenhagen.
Well, it's almost as though climate gate hadn't happened, to be honest. The vast majority of the world's mainstream media have still not really said what's in the ClimateGate emails. They may have mentioned it once or twice, as the BBC have, not given it anything like the coverage it deserves. Given the magnitude of the draft treaty, which is under consideration here. When I went into the conference yesterday to ask for a copy of the treaty, I went to the UN Documentation Centre and said, right, I want the current draft of a negotiating text. And they looked at me as though they were baffled. You know, the librarian there who had stacks of papers behind her in various languages, she just looked as though she'd never heard of it. So I insisted, and it took about 10 minutes, and they consulted each other, and there were three or four of them arguing over it. None of them would produce the document. So I then did a quick interview with a passing TV camera and came back to the attack, and I said, look, I know this treaty exists because this is what the conference is all about. It's discussing a treaty draft. And they said, oh, no, we've got no such thing. And I said, well, you have, and I want it, and I'm not going to be put off. And if I am put off, there will be an international diplomatic incident. And only then did they produce a stack of papers 2 inches thick, 1,000 pages, most of which was just complete irrelevant. But right at the bottom of the stack, when I ploughed my way through it, I found hidden the draft, or the current draft of the treaty. And once again, they are desperately trying to conceal from everybody here the magnitude of what they're attempting to do. They really are aiming to set up a world government. They no longer use the word government in the treaty. I think we've frightened them off that. But all the institutions of this world government and the enormous powers it's going to be given over free markets to tax the American economy to the extent of 2% of GDP, to impose a further tax of 2% on every financial transaction, and that could come to a very large percentage of GDP overall, and to close down effectively the economy of the West, transfer your jobs, if you're listening to this, to third world countries. All of that is still in the treaty draft, even after all the negotiating rounds, even after the fuss that we've all made to try to make them rethink, and even after ClimateGate.
Well, this is just devastating information. So this appears to be breaking news because I've been doing searches every hour for the latest draft text, and the media was saying it wasn't released. There was this Danish text dealing with the way the taxes would be implemented. We'll find out if that's the same text you have. That's up on the London Guardian website right now, but this is massive breaking news. They're also reporting taxes on all air travel globally, taxes on all fuel globally, just a complete takeover. But this financial tax, wow.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We have the fraudulent ClimateGate emails from the head UN-affiliated climate center in East Anglia. We have the fake hockey stick, the lies about the Arctic completely melting, the lies about polar bears and penguins can't swim. I'm seeing billboards all over Copenhagen saying, save the polar bears, they're going to die. Complete fraud. Big billboards of little girls saying, please don't let me drown. The most base, mindless, fraudulent information. Holdren saying 13-foot sea levels when the UN themselves says, what, 7 to 21 inches, and that itself based on a fraud. We have now Lord Christopher Monckton, because he is a member of the House of Lords, went in and demanded the latest treaty. This is breaking news. It has everything that was in the previous one and worse. You're going to hear this now breaking. We have the Danish text leaked of the architecture of this global government, how private corporate interest, IMF, World Bank, will run the system, not even the UN. So just that's got the third world now reeling, threatening to back out. The Saudis are calling for investigations. So much is happening. I'm going to attempt to go over all of this in the next 51 minutes with Lord Christopher Monckton, again, graciously joining us. So I'm going to try to just sit back, sir, and let you chronicle. You're there at Copenhagen. But also the good news, UN climate chief does say hacked emails are damaging. But as you said, they're like the cat caught with a canary in its mouth, going on about its business like it's no big deal.
They're trying very, very hard to pretend that ClimateGate didn't happen. Most of the people who've come to the conference don't really know that it happened, because most of the mainstream media have still really not said what's in these emails. And what is happening is that the mainstream media have done themselves terrible damage by signing up to this climate nonsense, and then by surlily refusing to admit that ClimateGate was happening, admit how serious it was, and simply inform their readers of what was actually in these emails. Admissions that while they're telling us, as the Met Office did just today, that today is the warmest decade since records began 150 years ago, privately what they're saying in the emails, the ClimateGate emails, is, hey, look, we've got a temperature which in fact has been falling, and we can't explain why, and it's a travesty that we can't explain why. So they're saying one thing to us publicly to maintain the scare, making them rich, and that's what's called fraud. It's criminal fraud. And on the other hand, they're saying privately, oh dear, we can't account for the fact there's been no warming for the last 15 years. I mean, that is, it's very serious, this disconnect between what they're saying among themselves privately and what they're admitting to us publicly.
Absolutely. Talking about criminal investigations, Lord Monckton, we have Senator Inhofe calling for it, the Saudis calling for investigations, and the Saudis have pointed out the United Nations, the progenitor of this fraud, they can't run the investigation.
No, they can't, because the United Nations is thoroughly compromised in all this, because the climate panel that it created via the United Nations Environment Program and the World Health Organization, namely this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which has produced four major reports on the climate, those four major reports are now all under a cloud, because all the major contributors to those reports, the lead authors, indeed the lead author of the entire science report of 2007, are part of these emails, part of this conspiracy to conceal, manipulate, tamper with, invent, make up, and eventually destroy data when it was requested by third-party scientists who wanted to check whether the various extraordinary claims they were making could possibly be true. It's a very, very serious matter, and there's no way the UN can be allowed to do this. I think this has got to go to district attorneys in the United States, and it's got to go to the police and the Crown Prosecution Service in the United Kingdom. It's already gone to the Information Commissioner, because there are plain admissions in emails there over the years that they have been planning to avoid disclosing information to other scientists, which is contrary to the scientific method, as well as contrary to UK freedom of information law. But the final seal on that freedom of information thing is the email in which one of the people concerned wrote to all the others and said, you must destroy all your emails relating to our participation in the fourth assessment report of the United Nations Climate Panel in 2007, because we're being asked for it by another scientist under the Freedom of Information Act, so you must destroy it. email clearly constitutes a serious criminal offence for which the highest possible level of financial penalty is allowed for by the Freedom of Information Act 2000. And the person who wrote that email, whom I won't name on the air because it's not fair to him, he is now going to face criminal charges. He is, I think, going to be indicted, convicted, and he won't be imprisoned because we don't imprison people yet for these offences. I think the law's going to have to change in the light of this. But he will certainly be subjected, as will his institution, to a very large financial penalty indeed, and quite rightly so.
Well, you're a member of the House of Lords, the upper chamber of your parliament, for those that don't know, Lord Christopher Monckton. Are you saying that the inside information that you're getting from government is that he will be prosecuted?
No, because the government would be most improper if it were to involve itself any way in whether or not to prosecute somebody. That is a function entirely of the Director of Public Prosecutions, who is an official who has to be independent of government. And also, I myself, although a member of the House of Lords, do not have the right to sit or vote. That was taken away.
No, I understand, but I'm saying you're saying you believe he will be charged, or you're expecting?
I think it is certain that he'll be charged. I myself, together with Professor Fred Singer, who founded the U.S. Satellite Weather Service many years ago, have written an official complaint to the Information Commissioner asking him to look into this, as has one of the people who had made a Freedom of Information request. Now, the person who made that information request has been answered. We have not yet been answered. And if I don't get an answer in the next few days, and as soon as I get back from this Copenhagen conference, I will be arranging for questions to be put down in the House of Lords about why the Information Commissioner isn't doing his job and replying to his correspondence.
So you're going to demand justice, and you and others have filed formal complaints, and we have them red-handed talking to the government, colluding to keep the public from getting information that should be public. I mean, that certainly is a conspiracy to engage in a cover-up.
It's worse than that. It's also against every rule of science, because the only way science can work is if people who publish results on which the largest tax increase and the largest abandonment of freedom ever conceived is about to be negotiated here at Copenhagen, they have not been sharing their results and their computer programs and their data with other scientists so that those other scientists can check them. All of this has been done behind closed doors so that they could get away with what turns out to be not just an information offense, but also a very serious scientific and financial criminal fraud for which a very long sentence in prison is the appropriate remedy. And what I have had is requests from two immensely senior professors, one in the United States and one in Canada, that I should draft for them complaints to the British police because they don't know how we do it here. They want me to just do that for them. They will make sure that I've got all the facts correct, and they've both sent me a large amount of information about the facts in their case, because they're named in these emails in the most uncomplimentary way, and it's very clear that a plot to devalue their scientific research by unfair and foul and dishonest means had been engaged in by the conspirators who have been talking to each other in these emails. So I will be going to see the police superintendent in the East Anglia Constabulary, who is heading up the investigation into who the whistleblower is and whether he should be prosecuted. And I can tell you from now, he won't be prosecuted, because we have legislation which allows whistleblowers to bring criminal offences to the attention of the public in this way without suffering any penalty themselves. So the whistleblower will not be prosecuted. However, I will be saying to the police officer that there is clear and systematic evidence of deliberate, wide-scale fraud right across the meteorological community, in NASA, in NOAA, in the University of East Anglia, in Penn State University, in universities and institutions of learning right across the world, where a small coterie of malevolent scientists, and when they come across as very nasty people in the way they write about everybody else that disagrees with them, they're very nasty.
Yeah.
the propaganda looks like it's directed at three-year-olds, pictures of children saying, please don't let me drown. Isn't it important to get these charges rolling while Copenhagen's going on? Because that will really blow up in the establishment's face. And that's why they're panicking, because they know they've been engaging in all this crime. Earlier last week, I'm sure you're aware of this, you're always a few steps ahead of us or more, or several leagues ahead of us. It's now coming out that the UN had documents, AP and Fox reported it, where they were recruiting and directing scientists in this fraud and in this artificial consensus from behind the scenes. So we have the United Nations directly in there as really the king rat orchestrating this.
Oh, well, of course, there's been a lot of evidence that one of the people who is very prominently named in the emails, indeed one of the people exchanging these emails, is the person who the UN called in to rewrite the 1995 second major climate assessment report. They do these every 5 years, the UN. A really big report. So this is the sort of what the bedwetters base their case on. Well, the UN says this. Now, the UN said in its 1995 report, and this was what the scientists, around 1,000 of them, had signed off on. What they said was, there is no detectable human influence on global temperature. We can't find any. We don't know when we will find one.
When I read his reports, his essays, when I look at his documentation, when I see him speak on television or radio, the way he lays it out is so amazing, because it's such a huge subject. And today he's going right at the fraud, and he was finishing up with the fraud and the criminal investigations and how it's premeditated fraud to establish a collectivist world government controlled by large financial interests that literally are setting themselves up as emperors of the planet. And you were finishing up, sir, but in the time we've got, I then want to get into the fact that you went and demanded and bent the will of these Copenhagen UN bureaucrats to cough up the latest secret version of the treaty with taxes on money, financial transfers. I mean, this is off the charts. Then I want to get your take on the propaganda on the ground there. I want to get your take on what all the scientists are out there talking about, how many people will die and starve to death if even a small of the amount of this is implemented, what the biofuels has already done. I mean, this is so monstrous. Please continue.
Right. Where would you like me to start? Yes, I was just saying that I've had these two eminent professors who've asked me to put a case to the police, and as soon as I get back from this conference, I will be going to see the senior police officer, the police superintendent in the East Anglia Constabulary, investigating this matter. I will be laying their reports before him. I will be asking for a two-hour briefing so that I can brief him on the background to this fraud, because, you know, if you're a police officer and you're not a climatologist, and somebody comes in and says, look, these people are lying and they're making up data, you'd never just believe it. You need to be properly briefed. And I'm hoping they're going to let me brief them on this so that they can understand just how monstrous is the manufacturing of data. Let's just take, for instance, the EPA's decision to try and say that carbon dioxide is an endangerment to the human health under the Clean Air Act.
And it's being announced. It's being announced. To coincide with Copenhagen.
Absolutely. Of course it was announced to coincide with Copenhagen. And this is clear politicking, again, of the worst kind. But the technical document on which that is based contains a graph lifted from a UN document and not checked, which pretends to suggest that the rate at which global warming is happening has been accelerating over the last 150 years, and particularly in recent years, in the last 25 years. Now, that graph is based on a well-known scientific fraud, it's a statistical fraud, in fact, called the endpoint fallacy, where you take a stochastic data set, that's one where you have to guess which way it's going to jump next, temperature records are like that, you know, it doesn't follow an ordered curve, it jiggles up and down a lot. And stochastic data sets like that are highly sensitive to precisely the point at which you start and end your trend line. And the UN has used this fact to try to convey an entirely false, entirely bogus, and fraudulent impression, which has been recited over and over again by ignorant politicians, that the rate of warming is itself accelerating, and the EPA, instead of checking independently, as I wrote and told it to do, instead just lifted this material out of the UN's, as we now know, thoroughly tainted documents without bothering to check it. And guess who was the lead author of the part of the UN document which produced this bogus graph? It was none other than one of the conspirators in the ClimateGate scandal. So we can tie all these people together in a series of frauds that now links in the EPA itself. And because the director of the EPA did not respond, she didn't even answer the submissions that I and many others put in, she herself is now going to be indicted for fraud because she's made herself part of the fraud by being warned that she was relying on documents that were themselves fraudulent, such as this graph, which is plainly fraudulent. And we know she used it because it's in the technical document that she published. And instead of withdrawing that, putting in a supplementary document saying we still believe we're right, but we can't rely on that graph anymore, she has done nothing about it. She has therefore become part of a very serious international scientific and financial fraud, and she will have to go and go to jail.
Amazing. Lord Monckton, is this not, as many researchers and scientists are billing it, the greatest scientific fraud of history? ClimateGate caught green-handed, cold facts about the hot topic of global temperature change after the ClimateGate scandal. He joins us from Copenhagen, Denmark, in extreme demand there, obviously. We're very fortunate to have him with us here today. And Lord Monckton, again, there's so many subjects to talk about. I want to get into the leaked treaty that you went and demanded and were able to get, the latest leaked information with the Danish text that has the third world figuring out they're being bamboozled and defrauded by this gaggle of scam artists. I also wanted to talk to you about your ideas for the troops out there to not, you know, get orders from headquarters, but to go to the sound of the guns, what we can do globally to expose and fight this fraud now that we're beginning to rout them. What about civil suits? You have all these scientists that were persecuted, that had their papers blocked. You have these scientific journals that were intimidated. That right there is a serious civil matter trying to destroy people's careers. Couldn't civil suits by parties defrauded or taxpayers around the world being defrauded by this lie? Isn't everyone in the world a plaintiff to sue the United Nations, to sue East Anglia, to sue the EPA, to sue Goddard Climate Center? I mean, your take on that, Lord Monckton?
Right. I think that, of course, anyone has the right to sue, but what you need to do is be very careful to use the proper procedures. And the first thing is that we're dealing here with a criminal rather than a civil matter. These people have committed crimes, serious, imprisonable offenses. You would call them felonies rather than misdemeanors. These are crimes for which you can go to prison and should go to prison if you commit them for a very, very long time, particularly in view of the effect that these crimes are already having on poor people around the world who are being killed in large numbers by starvation as a result of policy of Western nations, including the United States, to take, in the case of the United States, one-third of its agricultural land out from growing food for people who need it and into growing totally unnecessary biofuels for clunkers that don't. Result, a doubling of world food prices in the last 2 years. Result, starvation. Take Haiti, where they live on mud pie, made with real mud, costing 3 cents each, pinch of butter, pinch of salt. You take the mud, you mash it all up, lay it out in the sun to dry for 6 hours, sell it to your neighbour for 3 cents. That's what they're living on, or rather dying on, in Haiti now. I was telling this story last year to a conference of government and opposition representatives in Madrid, and a lady in the front row burst into tears, and I said, I'm sorry to have offended you, but it is a rather terrible thing that's happening. She said, I've just come back from Haiti. Now, because of the doubling of world food prices, they can't even afford the price of a mud pie, and they're dying of starvation all over the place, she said. And she was heartbroken. She said, the reason I'm crying is that you're the first person in the Western world I've ever heard mentioning the plight of the poor. She said, I'm so grateful, I just can't tell you.
Well, sir,
that's how serious this is. These people, by their scientific fraud and the financial fraud, they're profiting enormously. One of the documents from this series of leaked documents is the complete financial accounts of the climate research unit, how much grants they've had and how vastly the amount of grants have increased since they began peddling this scientific
and they're working
they
with oil companies.
While people die of starvation in a dozen regions of the world, and there are food riots in those regions too, hardly ever reported in any major Western news medium. It is a scandal of the worst proportion. Our own fellow creatures are being killed by starvation because these people have lied and made up the science and hidden it so that nobody else could check.
Sir,
it doesn't get worse than that.
Going back to the question I forgot to repose at the start of the break, is this the greatest scientific fraud in history, A? And then B, we also now have in the emails where they're meeting with Dutch Royal Shell, with BP, with Siemens, and others saying, oh, they're part of our agenda. This is only part of our takeover. This is so wonderful. Can you speak to this? Is this the biggest fraud, scientific fraud in history, A? And B, the collusion of Fortune 100 companies in this scam?
Right. Let's start with that first question. It follows from my last answer that a fraud on an international scale, which has already killed millions by starvation, is the worst fraud you could ever possibly commit, that our fellow human beings are dying in large numbers because of this fraud. It doesn't get worse than that. And then we come on to your second question. Just remind me of what that was, and I'll deal with it.
The oil companies and other major corporations feverishly
right.
working with the climate scammers.
That's right. This is because they've become so frightened of the united front that the world's governing class has put up, saying we are going to peddle this climate nonsense regardless of whether it's true, that they've decided, I think cravenly, and I've told many of them so, that that they'd better just give in and go along with it and try and make as much money as they can out of it. I think it's disgraceful, and I think their shareholders, there is a case for a civil suit, shareholders of companies who have done deals of this kind with the fraudsters at the UN and among the politicians and among the scientists, they do deserve to be sued by their shareholders for not protecting the best interests of shareholders, as every director of a major corporation is required by law to do. So I think that is indeed a disgrace. But what I'd like to do, if I may, is to turn to what is in this draft treaty
about
the amount of money that they want to take from you.
And sir, let me stop you. Let me stop you briefly. For those that don't know, and I've been searching every hour and checking during the breaks, you are the only person, and you first, several months ago, ferreted out the secret draft. Perhaps you can remind us how you were able to get that. And then
that's a friend of mine called Willie Sue at the Harvard Smithsonian Institute for Astrophysics, who reads everything, bless him, even that which is produced by the forces of darkness in this matter. And he got onto the UN, a very obscure UN website, the website of the Framework Convention on Climate Change Conference of the Parties. And he found what said it was a note by the Secretariat, but he noticed it was a much too large file just to be a note. So he looked at the file, and it was a two-page note, but attached to it was 186 pages. And that was the first draft of the Treaty
of
Copenhagen.
Okay, let me stop you there, because
the title of the file did not say Treaty of Copenhagen. There was nothing to indicate what this was. And had he not been diligent in reading everything, spotting the size of the file, neither he nor anybody would ever have found it. And they would have been able to say, if we had subsequently said, oh, but we had no idea that what the government signed up to in Copenhagen meant all this, the UN would have smoothly said, oh, but it's been on our website all the time.
Okay.
That's how they play these games.
Okay, now that said, again, recap. This is breaking here on air. You have the latest version. You're going to go over what's in it for everybody right now. This is breaking information right now. Lord Monckton, you have the floor.
Now, what I'm going to do is to give you just that bit of the treaty which talks of part of the financial arrangement. I have never seen a treaty as expensive as this one for the West. It's only the West that's going to pay. All the third world countries have been bought, so they will sign this treaty because they think they're going to get money out of it. But it's going to cost the West a fortune. Here's what it says. Developed country parties, that's what they call countries like the United States, for instance, are going to have to pay a tax of anything up to 2% of gross national product. To give you an idea of how big that is, for instance, that's half the US defense budget. That's how much they are going to confiscate to fund this vast new government that they're setting up. I haven't yet counted how many interlocked new bureaucracies there are to constitute this government, but I think it's around 700. I'm going to try and do a more exact count later. Then they're going to be levied on their greenhouse gas emissions. They're going to auction allowances to emit greenhouse gases, and if you don't buy an allowance to emit greenhouse gases, you won't be allowed to emit them. You could find that your local electricity company has to shut down because it can't afford to buy the right to emit this harmless gas into the atmosphere. There's also going to be a uniform global levy of $2 per ton of CO2 for all fossil fuel emissions. So that is really enormous. There are going to be levies on emissions from international aviation, specifically an international air passenger adaptation levy stroke green levy on every airfare, except on journeys that go in or out of poorer countries, of course. There's going to be a 2% share of the proceeds on various kinds of UN boondoggles towards giving money to third world countries. They're going to tax the money they're going to hand out. There's also going to be a global levy on international monetary transactions. That means every transfer of money across borders will be taxed. They no longer say, as they did in the original draft, what rate that tax was at, but they had in mind 2%. And that's on top of the 2% tax of GDP that they're going to charge anyway. There's also going to be, get this, penalties or fines for non-compliance of developed country parties, that's the United States, etc., with their emission reduction and financial resources commitments. That means if you don't cut your economy down to size and cut your carbon emissions, or if you don't pay the vast amounts of money that I've just read out for these various categories, which admittedly some of them are listed as options, but nevertheless we're looking at very, very serious amounts of money here, then there will be a police force, effectively. This government will have the right, for the first time ever in an international organization, to enforce its will by imposing unlimited financial penalties on any countries whose performance under this treaty they don't like. Now, I could go on and on and on and on, because there's pages and pages of this. There's an adaptation fund, a multilateral adaptation fund, solidarity funds, mitigation funds, multilateral climate technology funds.
A total global government takeover. Global government, sir. Is this total global government?
This is total global government, but on a scale which is simply unimaginable. I mean, the cost of all these extra boards and panels and technology funds and this and that, that's going to come out of general taxpayers' money over and above the various individual financial provisions I've just read out. We're looking at a grab for absolute power and absolute financial control worldwide by the UN and its associated bureaucracies and 700 new bureaucracies. And I'm not talking about 700 new bureaucrats, I'm talking about 700 new bureaucratic bodies. Who says how many hundreds of thousands of staff each of those will have?
Well, briefly,
they need an awful lot of our money to pay for all that, and this is how they're going to get it. A series of funds and this and that and the other. I've never seen anything.
And global authorities over travel, tracking where everybody goes. Expanding on that, now we have the Danish leaked memo that they've been passing around, and I have that draft here, and it talks about, this is even upsetting some of the UN bureaucrats in the third world countries, that the power will be held by the IMF, the World Bank, and other quasi-private organizations, so we have a private corporate structure directly looting the population. Why is this horrifying the third world toadies that have since been taken over by the IMF and World Bank?
They want the UN to run everything because the UN, they now see as simply a sort of socialist cash-generating machine, a cash cow for third world countries. The UN no longer serves any purpose except first its own enrichment and then a little bit of trickle-down after it's spent all that it wants on its own vast bureaucracies. And you know, there are 200 of those already. at least 200 represented here at this conference. Unbelievable alphabet soup of acronyms for these different, you know, UNEPs and WMOs and WFFs and this and that, hundreds of them. And all of that being paid for almost entirely by the taxpayers of the West, and occasionally letting some money trickle down to third world countries, whose leaders, therefore, want to get this money for their own Swiss bank accounts. And they look to the UN as simply another source of cash. And so they're trying to buy, the UN is trying to buy these third world countries by saying, well, we're going to really make the developed countries pay. And the reason the third world countries are now so annoyed with the Danish draft, which was simply intended to try and facilitate agreement, but it got out into the Guardian before it had done its job, and therefore the Guardian has rather blown the negotiations out into the open. The reason why the third world countries are annoyed about this is because it isn't their friend, the UN, that will be running things. It's the much stiffer, much more business-like World Bank and IMF. Now, of course, the trouble is that from the point of view of Western countries, whether it's the UN or the World Bank and the IMF that's running this world government, one astonishing characteristic, and I've looked right through this treaty and I can confirm this, it's just the same as in the previous draft, the word election, democracy, ballot, vote, does not appear anywhere. The one thing that's quite clear is that these enormous powers of taxation and interference, enormous powers of levying this and taxing that and funding the other, are all going to be without any representation at all. Now, the old principle, as you know well, on which the U.S. Constitution is founded, is that there should be no taxation of any citizen unless the body taxing that citizen represents that citizen by being elected by him. No taxation without representation, it's called. But this world climate body, this world government, is not going to be elected by anyone. It's going to be a self-appointed, self-perpetuating bureaucracy, just like the EU commissars who now run the European Union and make 90% of our laws. We have a parliament, of course. It's more or less completely redundant. We might as well let it go into the Thames. But they're now trying to use that model and have it on an international scale with no election, no ballot, no vote, no right to call these people to account, no right to question them, no right to remove them, no right to replace them.
This so is when the United Nations,
democracy worldwide.
So when the United Nations says this is the greatest moment for world government, this is the year of the establishment of global governance, as the head of the EU and as Ban Ki-moon, the head of the UN Secretary General, has said, they really mean it. And so we now stand here at the precipice. You are there in Copenhagen. Here's the big question. What do you predict is going to happen? And if we lose this and they do get it ratified, then we start fighting it at the national level. What do you see happening?
That this treaty has been through several negotiating rounds. And yet, although they've taken out the word government, because I've screamed at them and you've screamed at them and everybody screamed at them, all the mechanisms of government, all the funding sources, the funding streams, as they call them, or funding windows is the latest phrase, sounds very coy, but actually it means ways of raiding the taxpayers' pocket. All of these things are still in place and have not only survived the previous draft, but have been considerably amplified. So what we're looking at is, I'm afraid there's no other way of putting this, it is a worldwide conspiracy by the governing class against the governed, by the big boys against the little guy, by the rich against the poor, by the strong against the weak. And if you're a little guy doing your honest job of work to protect and pay for your family, you have good reason to be very frightened at this moment. And if you think that our kind host and I have been winding each other up and frothing at the mouth about something that's just another global government conspiracy theory, I just have three words for you. Read the treaty. As a result of the fuss I've made, there is a chance that by now, if you go on to the UN Framework Convention website, which I think is unfccc.int, then you may be able to find this treaty now in draft, because I have made quite a big stink about it not being immediately available when I asked. I think they have been shamed now into putting this up on the web. It'll probably still be quite hard to find. Why don't you all have a look, if you doubt in any way what I've been saying to you about the magnitude and breadth of the scope of this treaty, the powers and the wealth that it will transfer from you and your country to an alien, unelected, communistic bureaucracy with power to control all free markets worldwide, with the power to levy taxes on every financial transaction that crosses an international border. We're looking at an enormous, enormous communistic government which, in its sheer scale, is disproportionate to any conceivable threat from CO2, particularly now that we know by measurement that all of the UN's models were wrong and CO2 is simply harmless. It's an outrage, and I'd like to tell you, if I may, what you should do about it. As soon as you have finished listening to this program, you must dive for the telephone, and you must telephone the US Senate, and you must demand to speak to your senator or to one of his senior staffers. Do not be palmed off with a receptionist, a switchboard operator, a secretary, or an intern. You must speak to a senior staffer or to the senator himself, and you must ring both of the senators for your state, and they'll tell you on the switchboard who those senators are, and you must say the Treaty of Copenhagen shall not pass. The more of you do this, the more vigorously you do it, the more plainly, but always politely, you put your point to your senator and to his senior staff, the more likely it is that the Senate will refuse to ratify this treaty. And even though there are various backdoor ways by which Obama has already said via his staff during the election campaign that he would try to circumvent your constitution by going round the back and allowing the treaty to be enacted into domestic law by a simple majority of both houses, or simply by signing it by his executive authority and then using his majority on the Supreme Court to say that that's the way the trend in law is moving and therefore we'll count that as though it were a valid treaty. And the present Supreme Court will do that, you know, if you give it half a chance. And you need to make absolutely sure that your senators are told this treaty shall not pass, so that if any of these backdoor ways of pushing the treaty through against the will of the Senate are tried, the Senate will, if necessary, exercise the power that it has to establish the impeachment of your president. If he does try what his staffers said during his campaign for election, that he would try. So it's up to you now. You only have 10 days left of being a free country with a constitution of your own. Because once he signs that treaty, and with his Nobel Peace Prize and the millions of keening zombies screaming at him here at Copenhagen, he will sign anything. Once that happens, then it's bye-bye to your constitution. It's bye-bye to the freedom which America has long been a beacon to the world. It has offered this beacon of freedom to the world. Now you are in immediate peril of losing that freedom. However extreme what I'm saying to you may sound, every word of it is verifiably true. That is the intention of your, and I'm going to call it this, your communist
Big Brother,
president,
mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live on this Friday, the 11th day of December 2009. And out of the gates, we are simulcasting the full 4 hours of this Friday radio show, live in living color, via television at prisonplanet.tv.
Mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We are live on this Friday, the 11th day of December, 2009. And out of the gates, we are simulcasting the full 4 hours of this Friday radio show, live in living color, via television at prisonplanet.tv. Congressman Ron Paul is scheduled to join us in the next segment, but they are voting today up on Capitol Hill, so that may fluctuate. It does routinely when he is on Capitol Hill. You know, I've talked for years about how the global government plan is only the beginning. The United Nations documents, the Club of Rome documents, Council on Foreign Relations, State Department memorandums, biological diversity assessments, hundreds of government-funded textbooks call for a planetary regime, that's a quote, planetary police state government, that's a quote, planetary dictatorship, that's a quote, to carry out eugenics. This is what makes the whole world tick. It's why the license plate reading cameras are going in. It's why the CPS is interrogating all of your children and training them to spy on you. It's why the family is under attack. It's why our industrial society has been deindustrialized by design, publicly announced by the United Nations. And we're now going into the next deeper phase of this. The Chinese government officially yesterday, in the largest paper in the country and at the Copenhagen summit, called for a planetary regime to force a one-child policy to begin with. Simultaneously, papers across the world, TV news networks, and others called for a one-child policy to cut the carbon footprint, the deadly carbon dioxide now listed as a chemical toxin, even though plants breathe it, humans exhale it. And so we're going to be going over the latest on ClimateGate, the latest on the establishment of world government, and what this world's going to look like if these people succeed. And I want to break down the phases of control. It just has really hit me hard again last night and this morning how serious this is, how dire this is, how criminal and just viciously controlling and selfish the planetary controllers and their minions are. We need to have a call to arms peaceably in the info war, a call to the info war, to really call these people out for what they are, bloodthirsty killers. They're already killing people all over the planet thanks to starvation and cutting off water supplies. And I want to detail their plan today after Congressman Ron Paul leaves us. Of course, Bob Chapman will give us his once a week visit on the economy as well as he does every Friday. For part of the third hour, we'll also have open phones later in the broadcast. They're not open yet. But here is the mainstream news article, China Daily. That's their big paper, government paper. Population control called key to deal. China says they'll sign on if the new planetary government implements a one-child policy. So we're going to be going over that. After we come back, also the National Post out of Canada says the real inconvenient truth, the whole world needs to adopt China's one-child policy. Scores of other papers are announcing children are evil carbon blobs. And of course, ABC News is reporting that children are being taught in public schools under a UN program with UNESCO when they should die, that their carbon credits run out at age 11. And of course, the National ID card under treaty we'll keep a tally of your carbon credits. So that is all going into place. We're going to go to a quick break. We have Congressman Ron Paul on the line with us from Washington. And we'll go directly to Congressman Ron Paul on a host of issues. Government takeover of health care, his audit, the Fed bill, Obama getting the Peace Prize, the communist Chinese calling for a planetary regime to enforce one-child policies. We'll talk to the congressman, the leader in the fight for liberty and freedom globally, straight ahead.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network. Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Okay, we've got him until the bottom of the hour, unless the bell rings. There's a vote at 12:30 Eastern. We've got Ron Paul for the next 20 minutes. I want to first play a clip for the congressman of the Herman Van Rompuy, the head of the EU, saying that the carbon tax and this treaty will be the birth of world governance. And then I want to play Al Gore saying the same thing and get the congressman's take out of the gates on that subject. Here is the new head of the EU.
Nine is also the first year of global governance with the establishment of the G20 in the middle of the financial crisis. The climate conference in Copenhagen is another step towards the global management of our planet.
Okay. And he goes on for many minutes after that. Here's Al Gore saying that environmentalism is the key to global governance. Here is Al Gore, former Vice President Al Gore.
But it is the awareness itself that will drive the change. And one of the ways it will drive the change is through global governance and global agreements.
Congressman, for 30 years you've warned of global government reading their own documents. I have the Danish text leaked of the treaty calling for global governance, a global authority over all air travel over the oceans, 2% tax, flat tax on all GDPs paid to the IMF and World Bank, effectively abolishing the UN's power. The UN is freaking out. Private corporate global governance. Congressman, there's no longer any denial about this, is there?
No way. And in a way, it may serve to our benefit because the people are going to wake up just as our federal government fails. You know, we hear more about nullification and secession. And I figure that when the federal government fails or the money fails, there's going to be a lot of independence declared. So even though they're bold and they're making these plans, they're not going to be effective. And it may serve our purpose in waking up the people. But they've been pushing this for a good many years. But, you know, 20 years ago, approximately, when, you know, the Soviet system collapsed, they quit using the word socialism. But they shifted over toward this environmental effort, claiming that they could get government control through this. And they have done an amazing job in infiltrating our public school system and indoctrinating our young kids and young kids going home and talking and yelling at their parents and for environmental things and pollution and all this. So they have invaded us, but hopefully we can survive and be motivated enough to counteract these efforts and make it clear that world government is to no one's benefit except those who get to govern the others.
I've interviewed literally hundreds of reporters that have been at these different globalist summits, including five or six the last few days at Copenhagen, and they say that there's a sense of desperation and panic by the big banks predominantly that are funding this private corporate global government. Sir, do you agree with me, or perhaps you can elaborate on the fact that now that they've been revealed, because we did our job in the face of ridicule and exposed their global government plan, that now because they've been exposed, they're coming out in the open and being more bold and honest about it? I mean, what's your take on why they're so bold?
Well, I think that could be it. They have to be more aggressive. But in many ways, though, people are backing off from this because there, you know, some major candidates had been supporters of trade, cap and trade, and have taken their names off the bill. So they're starting to understand this. Same way with, audit the Fed thing. You know, just look how the establishment come down hard and Bernanke hiring lobbyists and him writing editorials. It hasn't seemed to help their side. They're still on the defensive. But we are in a struggle. There is no doubt, and they are going to get tougher. And right now, too many of them have too much power in different governments. And if they take this next step that they can exert power with a world government and a world military, which is partially here already, then we're in very big trouble. But I tend to want to be more optimistic, thinking that the people will wake up and we have the tools, still of the radio, hopefully that'll last, and still we have the internet, hopefully that'll last. But they're capable of closing us down, so this is vital that we wake up as many people as possible as quickly as possible.
Congressman, you brought up the fact that the Senate is now saying they're probably not going to ratify the treaty, even if Obama signs it. That may be a red herring to make us stand down, but then it looks like it may be real because, as you know, Obama 2 days ago was in the Associated Press headline, Obama threatens command and control and tells Congress, the real boss in our system of government, the three pillars of government, legislative, executive, judicial, saying, I don't care if you don't pass this. The EPA is going to implement this by executive fiat.
Yeah, and that goes to show what they can do, you know, on the system that we've allowed to be created. You know, the executive branch has tremendous powers, and the courts won't help us. They write regulations. They have the force of law. And it reminds me of that statement, stroke of the pen, law of the land, kind of cool. And that's how powerful presidents are. They write executive orders. They write signing statements, and they do what they want. And this is why the movement is getting very, very disgusted and saying, you know, they keep talking about nullification and secession, and that growth is going to continue.
In closing, Congressman, some good news. You got 311 sponsors. It's passed out of committee. Audit the Fed. The Fed's admitted you audit us. You'll destroy us. In the last 3 minutes we've got left, sir, auditing the Fed, give us a report on that.
Okay. I think most know that last week it was put into a bank regulation bill, which is a monster of a bill. When it came out of the committee, I voted against the bill because I don't vote for a few good things when there's a lot of bad things in it. But my amendment won by 42-26, which was a major victory. It's on the House floor at this moment. It will be voted on at the end of the day. And the auditing provision was in both the Republican version and the Democratic version. The Democratic version will pass, and the auditing provision will be in there. The real work needs to be done in the Senate. So if anybody knows whether, you know, where their senator stands, try to urge the senators to get on that same bill. I think it's 604, and there's 30 in over there. There's been several senators that have put a hold on Bernanke's reappointment unless they have a vote on 1207, the auditing bill, in the Senate.
So, sir, this is a massive victory. I mean, today it looks like they're going to probably pass it in the House. It'll go to the Senate, and then the fight's in the Senate. This is incredible news.
Yeah, it's big. We have no idea, you know, exactly what will happen. There'll be a lot more resistance in the Senate, and the Fed still has time to do all that they do. But nevertheless, I think you're correct in describing this a major victory for the people. You know, the grassroots got this done. I didn't twist arms. I have no clout up here in that sense. But we have 313 on there, all the Republicans and a lot of Democrats. So it's a really great testament to what can happen when the people come together, because this is not a conservative Republican bill. I mean, it's liberals and populists and libertarians and constitutionalists have all come around to believing enough is enough, and the Fed is too big and too secret.
And we finally identified it as the real shadow government instead of Republican and Democrat puppets. You've been working for close to 30 years for this. Even if we don't have victory this year, we're a hair away. It'll be assured next year as the crisis accelerates. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't think they'll be able to ever. If they squelch us, it'll just make it a bigger issue. And the problems are going to get worse, and they will know where to look, and they have to look to the Federal Reserve System to find a real source of our problems.
Well, Congressman, I salute you. Your book is a bestseller in the Fed and bookstores and at Amazon.com. Go to campaignforliberty.com. Go to all the great sites of Ron Paul. Support him. Thank him for running for president a few years ago. That really helped focus this coalition for liberty and freedom. And I know I'll talk to you again early next year, Congressman, with your once-a-month check-in with us. Thank you so much. And get out there and cast that vote for the bill you wrote and introduced. We salute you, and what a great Christmas gift, sir, you've given us.
Thank you. Good to talk
Thank
to you.
Thank you so much. Bye. Congressman Ron Paul. Absolutely amazing, ladies and gentlemen. Absolutely amazing. Yeah, world government's coming in, but the war's on. We're fighting back. Our numbers are growing. We're having victories. We're learning we can stand up against bullies. Like when you finally go ahead and punch that bully in the nose, his nose breaks.
Beyond their plans to devastate the economy for global consolidation,
a new international framework of draconian law is being constructed to establish a system of neo-feudalistic serfdom.
Remember, it was Bill Clinton who gave us NAFTA. And it was Al Gore, the hero of the environmental movement, who was the hatchet man for the Clinton administration to cram NAFTA down the throats of a reluctant Congress.
Now, this is a good deal for our country, Larry, and let me explain why.
Al Gore, who carried the ball for NAFTA and GATT, is now one of the top standard bearers for the elite's agenda.
I didn't interrupt you.
Okay, now, guys. Is this
NAFTA? Why? Huge numbers of manufacturing jobs left Canada, came into the United States because of a 15% wage differential. We pay our workers less than Canada. Now, when you've got a 7-to-1 wage differential between the United States and Mexico, you will hear the giant sucking sound. No, there's a political lesson. There's a business lesson.
He serves as the front man for the carbon tax cap and trade scheme, which will not only increase taxes on every American, but will also transfer our national sovereignty and rights to a tyrannical world government, all in the name of saving the earth.
Is the legislation that we are discussing here today, is that something that you are going to personally benefit from?
If you believe that the reason I have been working on this issue for 30 years is because of greed, you don't know me. I've been willing to put my money where my mouth is. Do you think there's something wrong with being active in business in this country?
I am simply asking for clarification.
I'm proud of
the relationship.
I'm proud of it.
My name is Dr. Tim Ball. I'm a climatologist. I have a PhD in climatology from the Queen Mary College, the University of London, England. And I've been studying climate both with my 9 years in the Canadian Air Force, where it was essential to flying, and then after that at the university. So it's essentially been the whole theme of my career. Initially called climate skeptics, I said, but all scientists are skeptics. If you're not a skeptic, you're not a scientist. And then when that didn't work, then they came out with the charge that we were climate change deniers. And I remember when I was first called a denier, and it was in the Times of London and England. And of course, the word denier was clearly deliberately chosen because of the Holocaust connotations of that term. So it was not only a charge that you were ignoring the truth, but you were doing it in a very evil way. And of course, I laugh about that now because my whole career has been anything but a climate change denier. I've spent my career trying to educate people to how much climate changes naturally. So I'm anything but a denier, but of course that is part of the politics.
Under the Nazis, there was something called race science. They had a lunatic theory of eugenics, the Aryan heritage, and all the rest of this. Absolute crackpot pseudoscience. There was no empirical measure or empirical test for the validity of those theories. They simply asserted them, and if you were a professor who stood up to them, then the Gestapo would come and take you away. We are perilously close to such a situation right now. Any academic, any other figure standing up to say the global warming theory of Al Gore is a piece of crackpot nonsense is in danger. You'd be fired from a government job, and in many universities, your job would be in danger.
And, of course, it's also part of what's called ad hominem, that if you can't defeat the person's argument rationally, you start attacking the person. And we see that with these terms, and we see it with Al Gore calling them flat earthers.
Congressman, you began by denying that there is a consensus on the science. There is a consensus on the science.
Well, you mustn't have been listening to our testimony that we've had for the last few days with dozens of experts that have come in who have given completely different views.
Well, there are
so I would encourage you to go back and look at the testimony this committee's heard.
There are people who still believe that the moon landing was staged on a movie lot in Arizona.
And neither of us was one of those. And I know you like giving those cute anecdotes. This is not a cutesy issue. We're talking about
no,
that can export millions of jobs out of our economy, out of our country.
Richard Lindzen, an MIT professor of atmospheric physics, said it many years ago when he said the consensus was reached before the research had even begun. And then scientists like myself that stood up and said, hold on a minute, I got problems with this. Oh, paid by the oil companies. Don't trust that guy.
What the international scientific community is saying is correct. There is no legitimate basis for denying it.
Now, you hear the consensus argument. Well, the majority of scientists. What they're always talking about is, and originally the IPCC was about 3,600 scientists. It's now down to 2,500. That's the people they're talking about. But when you look at it, most of them are bureaucrats. They're not scientists at all. And very, very few of them are actual climate experts.
Now, the consequences of that, and whether that's because of man-made CO2, I think are debatable.
If CO2's not causing the climate change, what is? What are the major driving factors? And so they're essentially the ones that are left out by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It's unbelievable to me that they can come out and ignore the sun. I mean, everybody knows the sun goes in, it gets cool. You notice that, right? You have an eclipse, the temperature drops, and the birds start to get excited and so on. When you look at the seasonal changes with the sun, how you can suggest that the sun is not a factor is really quite remarkable.
Giving us false scientific information is not going to clean up our environment. Speaking with a lot of promises and innuendo is not going to help clean up our environment.
The globalists have co-opted the environmental movement. There are a lot of real environmental problems we face, like genetic engineering, where they're splicing plants, animals, insects, you name it. Toxic waste dumping in the ocean. No one wants to breathe bad air or drink toxic water. But the global carbon tax has nothing to do with that. It's a tax literally on breathing. Go out on the street or talk to your friends, your neighbors. Ask them, hey, should we ban dihydrogen monoxide? It's bad for the environment. The average person will sign your petition calling for the banning of water. That's right. Dihydrogen monoxide is water. It's the same thing with table salt, sodium chloride. And that's exactly what the establishment is doing with carbon dioxide. Ooh, dioxide. It has this scary sounding name. But the truth is, it's one of the four elements of life on this planet. Oxygen, carbon dioxide, water, and sunlight. And if the establishment can tax and list as a toxic waste one of those basic four building blocks of life, carbon dioxide, they can regulate and control every facet of our lives and shut down any businesses that aren't part of their new world order.
The idea that carbon is a pollutant is essentially a way of saying that humanity is a disease or a cancer that ought to be wiped out. Genocide. People have argued in this environmental coterie around Obama, around Holdren, the theoretician of de-development, who is now the science advisor of the White House, really the anti-science advisor. They've argued that babies are carbon monsters, carbon machines.
Network.
This is an absolutely anti-human doctrine.
They use the environmental movement to promote their real agenda, which is globalization and federalization and power.
The advisor to Gordon Brown wants to exterminate one half of the population of the British Isles. Now, that's something Hitler might have tried to do, or Stalin. They didn't succeed. Will Gordon Brown do it? You can read this in the statements of these lunatics, radical environmentalists, fanatical Malthusians, tree huggers, whatever you want to call them. This is an ideology of genocide which can be documented exhaustively, ad nauseam, out of their own statements.
When Gore said the science is settled, that raised red flags amongst the media and then also amongst a lot of other people that sort of knew that that wasn't true, other scientists, and started to look at it. And of course, the more they looked at it, the more they realized No, science is never settled.
What is coming down now is environmentalism is nothing but phony science. Nothing but phony science. And if we really believe in the environment, if we really believe in freedom, if we really believe in truth, we need to get some straight answers.
Now, the Kyoto Agreement, of course, was reached in the city of Kyoto. And what was interesting was several things came out of that. But the first thing was that all countries had to participate in Kyoto, but not all had to take action. Only the developed nations were required to reduce their level of CO2. The developing nations were excluded. Now, of course, at that time, China was, and in some ways you can argue it still is, a developing nation. So it wasn't required to meet any targets under Kyoto, nor was India. The U.S., of course, held out. And what's interesting is that the U.S. Senate voted 95-0 against the Kyoto Accord, even though Al Gore was the vice president at the time. And lucky for him, he didn't have to cast a deciding vote. But so it was 95-0 against it because the U.S. Senate saw, no, this is a socialist distribution of wealth. This is going to cost jobs and economy. And so they scrapped it completely.
We're now told that you have to buy carbon offsets. In other words, if you have sinned by having a carbon footprint and by carbon emissions, you've got to buy a carbon offset, which is usually a scam. Somebody claims to have planted an acre of grass in the third world. It never happened. They take your money and laugh all the way to the bank. But they're telling you that in order to cleanse your guilt, you've got to buy a carbon offset.
Talk about carbon polluters. You talk about them. It's my understanding that back in 1997, when you were vice president, Enron's CEO, Ken Lay, was involved in discussions with you at the White House about helping develop this type of policy, this trading scheme. And is that accurate? Is it inaccurate? It's been reported.
I don't know. But I met with Ken Lay, as lots of people did, before anybody knew that he was a
crook. And clearly, you can see why so many of us are concerned about this type of cap-and-trade energy tax that would be literally turning over this country's energy economy.
I didn't know him well enough to call him Kenny Boy.
Well, you knew him well enough to help devise this trading scheme. And obviously, we know what Enron and these big guys on Wall Street like Goldman Sachs, and I know you've got interest with Goldman Sachs.
No.
Well, that's been reported. Is that not accurate?
No, I wish I did.
With executives from you're partnered in companies with executives from Goldman Sachs. Well, if you're not.
Al Gore has got to be the greatest con artist in modern history. This guy claims he invented the internet, even though it's on record he's a liar, and he got away with it. He was the pitch man that successfully sold, as vice president, NAFTA and GATT. That's lowered the standard of living in the United States and Mexico and almost completely deindustrialized our country. Now he's saying you should pay him and his private company, set up by Enron, a carbon tax on breathing. Look, if you want to buy Al Gore's propaganda, go ahead. But before you do that, you should at least look into the claims he's making.
There was a meeting in the White House in 1998 between Al Gore and Bill Clinton, Ken Lay, and Lord Brown. Okay, well, who were these people? Well, we know the president, the vice president. Ken Lay, of course, was the president of Enron. And Enron was a major, major player in the carbon credit, carbon trading. And in fact, stood to make an enormous amount of money out of it. And so it was part of the collapse of Enron. And Lord Brown, of course, was the head of the largest oil company in the world. And they were looking to buy into this, as is happening now, where the energy companies are becoming the big promoters of, oh, we got to go green, we got to go to alternate energies, and all of this stuff. They saw a business opportunity and leapt onto it, and one that would make them look green again.
When it came time for the 1,200-plus page greenhouse gas emission and carbon legislation to be voted on, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, would not let the Republicans or even members of her own party see the bill until minutes before the vote. Republican Minority Leader John Boehner engaged in a rare House filibuster and read shocking section after shocking section from the legislation.
Now, I really hate to do this, But when you file a 300-page amendment at 3:09 a.m., the American people have a right to know what's in this bill and have a right to know what we're voting on. Page 48. Each building code enforcement department receiving a grant under subsection A shall impanel a code administration and enforcement team consisting of at least one full-time building code enforcement officer, a city planner, and a health planner or similar officer. I can take you to Chickasaw, Mercer County in my district. They don't have one full-time person that works for the village. All right, not one. Look at the mandate on every city, village in America right here in this bill. So that we're not only going to tell you what the codes are going to be, but we're going to tell you how many people you need to hire to enforce this. Page 41, determine any geographic area within the contiguous United States that lacks a federal power marketing agency. Because, you know, we can't move power around the country without a federal power marketing agency. We do it today, but now we have to have a new government agency to do this. All California housing standards are now going to be imposed on every American community. You don't have the right to have your own building standards in your community or in your state. Hell no! The federal government's going to tell you what they are.
It quickly became clear why Pelosi and the Democratic leadership were desperate to keep the contents of the bill secret before the vote.
Now, because of this underlying bill, the federal government will virtually have control over every aspect of lives for the American people. It is time to stand up and say, we get to choose. We choose liberty or we choose tyranny. It's one of the two. The underlying bill represents the tyranny and the intervention of the federal government. It's our choice. What will we choose today? Will we choose liberty or will we choose tyranny?
And I know that we'll be facing the single moms that heard from last summer. They can't afford the gasoline bill. They can't afford the propane. You didn't do a great thing. You hurt some really decent families struggling, trying to make it, and this is going to be their death knell. It breaks my heart. I yield back.
It is, of course, a carbon tax on economic activity, farming, manufacturing, real production here inside the United States. It would tend to shut down even those miserable remains of an industrial economy that we still have after the collapse of the Detroit automakers and their related subcontractors and so forth.
Every home and business in the United States would be federally regulated and controlled. Mandatory home inspections will be carried out by federal inspectors, and it's all at the expense of the homeowner.
In New York, they're called the environmental police.
On this day, a surprise visit to a market in Brooklyn's Chinatown.
And every day you're not in compliance, you face huge fines.
Go to page 235. The secretary may set and collect reasonable inspection fees to cover the cost of inspections required. So number one, they can come in, the federal government can come in, inspect your house, and send you the bill. And if they find that you're out of compliance with this new federal code, the secretary shall assess a civil penalty for violations of this section. And then further going to page 236, each day of unlawful occupancy shall be considered a separate violation.
The Commissar Green police openly brag that they will have the power to selectively enforce the new edicts on a case-by-case basis.
It's funny because when I tell people what I do for a living, the first response usually is, you're the environmental police. There is no environment in New York City.
With this new power, the Green Mafia can take over the entire economy through selective enforcement.
We know, Madam Speaker, that this national energy tax will cost the American people $2 trillion. We know that. We know this will result in a loss of 2.5 million jobs every year for the American people. We know that. We know this will result in a reduced standard of living for Americans. We know that. What is the point and what's the benefit?
The same central banks that have stolen more than $50 trillion from national treasuries across the planet are now creating a new derivatives fraud through the cap-and-trade carbon tax system that dwarfs their previous Ponzi schemes.
We've just watched a financial meltdown in this country, the likes of which hasn't been seen in some time. Now, if people like credit default swaps, they're really going to like the carbon swaps that are going to occur and the carbon future swaps. We spent a full day in this committee last summer talking about the manipulation of the energy futures market in oil. We're going to create, I fear, another such system that people who have an inclination to react dishonestly to systems are going to actually have a new opportunity. Is that not a problem?
A select group of central banks are lobbying for the same legislation to be passed worldwide. Once the so-called green economy laws are in place, only global megacorporations and their subsidiaries will be allowed to do business. Van Jones, Barack Obama's first green job czar, has stated repeatedly on the record that the new green economy is only a cover for a complete revolution against capitalism and the total redistribution of wealth. But what Van Jones doesn't tell his sad followers is that the elite are bragging that the modern green movement was designed from its creation to destroy the middle class and transfer all wealth into the hands of a super elite. They're not doing this to uplift the poor. No, the goal is to enslave the planet and usher in a new dark age. Every nation on Earth is in the process of, or has already passed, its own set of carbon tax laws and regulations. If their plan is successful, every nation on Earth will not only pay tribute to the powerful world government, but every facet of human life will be regulated by the technocratic global planners. Under the carbon tax scheme, China, India, Mexico, and over 150 other nations are exempt from the global tax system. You see, the bankers already own and control the third world. Their final target is the middle class of the West. Once they've dismantled the economies of the United States, Europe, and Japan, they believe no one can stand in their way. In short, the New World Order is a global corporate takeover. In their global corporate state, there is no room for individuality, sovereignty, or independence. As their program begins to face more and more opposition, lawmakers and supporters of the man-made global warming hypothesis want laws to be passed, making it illegal to question their theories. Recently, the head of Greenpeace was forced to admit that the Arctic and Antarctic ice caps grow in the winter and shrink in the summer, and that this is all part of a natural process driven by the tilt of the Earth and the sun.
The cosmic radiation coming from space, the amount reaching the Earth is affected by the strength of the sun's magnetic field. So the magnetic field of the sun is almost like a gateway controlling the cosmic radiation reaching the Earth. The magnetic strength of the sun is also related to the number of sunspots. So they are directly related to changes within the inner structure of the sun. The amount of cosmic radiation reaching the lower atmosphere creates more cloud, right? And cloud forms, you need to have what are called condensation nuclei. That is, little particles around which water can change from water vapor or gas into water droplets, minute particles that are visible in the form of clouds. We've known for a long time that there was more cloud than the amount of particles in the atmosphere, because we assumed it was clay particles and salt particles that were creating this condensation process. But there was this gap. We now realize, of course, it's the cosmic radiation that's doing it. So what the cosmic radiation is doing, controlled by the magnetic field of the sun, is putting up it's like putting up a screen in the greenhouse and blocking out the sunlight. And of course, that then affects the temperature of the Earth. That's why there's a relationship between the sunspots and the temperature on the Earth. So we now know the mechanism, but they completely ignore that.
More than 31,000 scientists from across the United States, including more than 9,000 PhDs from the fields of climatology, atmospheric science, earth science, and hydrology, signed a petition rejecting man-made global warming as a scientific fraud. This shattered the hoax of the so-called consensus that the mainstream media had been pushing for years, that every scientist on Earth believed that man-made global warming was a fact. If the people are able to block their carbon tax takeover, the elite's agenda to establish a planetary world government will collapse. To force their unpopular agenda upon the planet, the controllers are racing to complete the construction of their police state control grid. Borrowing from tactics used in the past by communist, fascist, and other totalitarian regimes, every form of classical textbook tyranny is now being implemented in the West. In the United States, the central government is federalizing local police.
State and local officers are in a great position to collect important information on terrorists and their allies. And the Terrorist Screening Center stands ready to help you.
This video, produced by Homeland Security, is required viewing for all departments in the U.S.
And with the teamwork of local, state, and federal law enforcement, we have an excellent opportunity to see the picture and solve the puzzle before these terrorists can strike again.
State, county, and city police now take their marching orders directly from DHS and FEMA. The videos and training manuals turn peace officers, once guardians of the Republic, into secret police.
See way down there? There's a woman taking photos of the dam. Someone called 911 and reported a suspicious person. As you guessed, she's going to be a Category 3 hit. And since it's very important that we don't let her know that we know, both the dispatcher and the officer need to make sure she doesn't hear the radio traffic.
Stand by. If I could ask you to wait right here, please.
Sure.
Everyday items and activities are listed as proof that you are sympathizing with shadowy boogeymen of terror.
Of course, he's going to keep his eyes open for anything interesting or unusual in the car. That would include cameras, binoculars, video equipment, GPS. Maybe things like sleeping bags that suggest they're living out of the car.
From their inception, Homeland Security and NORTHCOM were set up to dominate the people and the states, not to fight the CIA-created Al-Qaeda. Patriotic members of the military and law enforcement, at great risk to their lives and careers, have sent this filmmaker federally and internationally produced law enforcement manuals, textbooks, documents, and videos. The MIAC report, distributed to Missouri law enforcement, lists gun owners, libertarians, constitutionalists as potential terrorists. The federally written document went on to list Ron Paul, Bob Barr, and American flag bumper stickers as dangerous paraphernalia linked to white supremacists. Even before 9/11, FEMA was quietly indoctrinating local police to have a hatred of the Founding Fathers and everything our constitutional republic stands for.
Who was the first terrorist organization in the United States? Who?
Founding Fathers.
Yeah. Founding Fathers. You mean Thomas Jefferson?
Oh, yeah.
You mean George Washington?
Oh, yeah.
Paul Revere?
Yeah.
These guys right here, let me ask you something. Did they try to scare people?
Oh, yeah.
They tried to intimidate the British. Did they use acts of violence? Your founding fathers, my founding fathers, were involved in acts of terrorism against British officials because they systematically had British officials assassinated.
In the old Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, and Maoist China, the police's main job was not fighting crime. In totalitarian forms of government, the police are political enforcers, or Commissars as they were known in Russia. It's their job to spy on the public and to intimidate the exercise of free speech. Once a climate of fear has been achieved, the public begins to self-censor, to shut down. Once the people have been intimidated to withdraw from the field of intellectual battle, the tyrants have a free hand to expand their oppression and looting of the helpless serfs.